This is an RNZ podcast.
This is Media Watch. I'm Colin Peacock. This week we look back at another horrible week for New Zealand journalism and the people who value it. Last week, News Hub's owners announced that they plan to close it completely by mid-year. This week, TVNZ proposed to close long-standing shows and cut almost one worker in 10, mostly in news. And if it plays out like this, New Zealand will end up with nearly no current affairs TV at all anymore within weeks, save for shows focused on Māori issues, funded from the public purse by agencies that have provided for that. Now, many say it's a problem of changing economics, technology and viewing habits in the digital age, but it's also now a political problem because of how our media are structured. The government says it's on the case, but one minister with a role in it doesn't seem sympathetic.
They just prove my point that media is lacking the ability to ask the simple question. Maybe it's the way that we're conducting ourselves that's led to our loss of audience share.
We'll look at that later in this program. And on Media Watch this week, we also ask, could all this have been avoided if a political solution in the recent past hadn't been abandoned? But first, we look back at how the dramatic news of a second wave of cuts to TV news played out this past week.
We're going to follow some order here, team, because we're not doing the rabble. Thank you.
That was the Prime Minister, Christopher Luxon, trying to bring order to his post-cabinet media conference last Monday. Now there, he wanted to make sure that RNZ's political editor, Jo Moyer, got a fair go, and she duly asked the Prime Minister about the billion-dollar transport and pothole policy plan, which he'd just unveiled. But after last week's shock announcement that News Hub could close down, and 2 days later, the free-to-air TV market leader TVNZ posting big losses and a serious slump in revenue, the Parliamentary Press Gallery were also interested in the problems of the media. And the next day, Morning Report's Corin Dan raised that with Jo Moyer, once the media minister had not wanted to be interviewed about it.
Christopher Luxon made the comment at PostCab yesterday, she has done some interviews. Well, the Prime Minister's wrong, she hasn't. She has only done two bridge runs, which are very short, at Parliament.
Well, Jo Moyer was right that Melissa Lee's comments were confined to brief responses in the corridors when confronted by reporters like her. And on Wednesday afternoon, Melissa Lee did front up. First on Checkpoint, where Lisa Owen began like this.
So why are you so relaxed about the demise of New Zealand's media?
I don't know why you actually say that, but it is shocking. And the News Hub announcement last week was surprising when I met with Warner Brothers last year when they came and saw me, talking about different things that could potentially help them.
The minister went on to explain that she didn't know they were planning to shut the whole thing. And she also said a bailout was not an option in a cost of living crisis. Lisa Owen also pressed Melissa Lee on the possible fallout from TVNZ's big losses reported late last week.
But is your understanding that there is going to be redundancies announced in the short term?
That is up to TVNZ to announce.
Have they told you that?
I've had conversation with TVNZ on various different things.
But by the time the media minister was on News Talk ZB's drive show, just 1 hour later, the story had changed. TVNZ's news staff had been told to watch their inboxes the following morning for news about the future of news at TVNZ. And the host, Heather Duplessy-Allen, seized on that on News Talk ZB.
Hello, Heather.
What's the announcement from TVNZ tomorrow?
I have no idea.
They haven't given you a heads up?
I don't know if there's actually an announcement.
Are they cutting newsroom staff?
That is for TVNZ to actually announce if that's what's happening, but I don't know.
Now, predictably, the presenter had another go at that question and then another.
They did not tell me that they were cutting staff on news.
Okay, so if they cut staff on news tomorrow, that will be a surprise to you.
Well, they're talking about programming that they will have to consider.
Are they going to cut in Shortland Street?
And next up on ZB's drive show, its panel section called The Huddle, featured, coincidentally, TVNZ News presenter Jack Tame.
I can see that I've chosen a good night to come on.
Jack, yes, so Jack.
And Jack Tame told News Talk ZB he too was out of the loop on what was to come.
All I know is that our CEO has been pretty frank and open, I think, about the likelihood of some sorts of cuts and changes at TVNZ. I don't know if there's going to be a news. I don't know if it's going to be to programming. I don't know if it's going to be to both.
And on Thursday, the bad news was this.
Kia ora, good afternoon. TVNZ has confirmed close to 10% of its workforce face job losses under a restructure plan. Kim Baker-Wilson is live in Auckland. Kia ora, Kim. What more do you know?
The broadcaster has told staff that its headcount is high and so are its costs, and that some changes do need to be made.
Last week it was News Hub reporting its own demise. This week TVNZ reporting its own cuts on the midday news on Thursday, a show which, 24 hours later, was on the chopping block itself. The late news show tonight and TVNZ's flagship current affairs show Sunday, with a 22-strong team of reporters and producers, was also on the list for closure. And among them was presenter Mirjana Carmel, also the host of the weekend show Marae, and she was one of the few well-known names to voice their fears 24 hours earlier.
As the last of its kind, is that what we want in our media landscape, to not have an in-depth current affairs show?
And on top of all that, Fair Go will also be gone by the end of May, with a 47-year track record as one of TVNZ's most popular local shows. And, just like Sunday, it pulls a big audience in primetime still. So if News Hub does vanish from rival Channel 3 by mid-year, there will be just one evening TV news bulletin, TVNZ One News, and no long-form current affairs at all, except maybe TVNZ's Q&A, The Marae Show and Tangata Pacifica, all funded from the public purse by New Zealand On Air and the Māori Broadcasting Funding Agency, Te Māngai Pāho. Now, tellingly, the other weekday TVNZ national news-based shows which will carry on, Breakfast and Seven Sharp, are the ones which generate income not just from TV ads in the commercial breaks, but also through what they call partner content deals, yielding integrated advertising, which are effectively paid-for content slots within the programmes. Think, for example, of celebrity chefs talking about nutrition while also advertising their own meal kit home delivery services.
So we thought it would be a great time to start now.
Sounds like a great idea. Thanks for your time, Nadia. Always lovely to see you.
And the recipe for that meal is up on our Facebook page now, and you can sign up for your Fresh Start 6-week reset at myfoodbag.co.nz.
Now, TVNZ had made it known that cuts were coming as long as 6 months ago, and that would include a headcount reduction. And executives had made it clear that reinforcing TVNZ's future-focused digital-first strategy would be a key outcome of this, as well as just cutting costs. And in that case, the other notable service to reportedly suffer cuts was a bit of a surprise, the youth-focused digital native outlet ReNews. After its launch in 2018, its young staff revived a mothballed studio and then gained a reputation for hard work and then for the quality of its work, carrying off plenty of national journalism awards over the past 2 years. And they were also reaching younger people who rarely, if ever, turn on a television set these days.
Kia ora koutou. In the supermarket today, one cabbage was $7. With that and the cost of rent, plus, of course, you know, the impending doom of climate change, it can feel like a pretty shit time to be a young person. But we've got politicians here to tell us what they're going to do about it.
But reportedly, the staff of ReNews is now to be halved, and it's losing some of its leaders. Now, breaking the news to TVNZ viewers on TVNZ News itself, reporter Kim Baker-Wilson said that the main media workers' union wasn't sitting on its hands.
The union tells us that it is going into this to fight to save the jobs that it can.
And on Friday, some staff made it plain that they weren't giving up just yet either on their shows. For example, Garth Bray, A Fair Go. And TVNZ's statement on Friday did emphasise that the plans are just proposals at this stage. And they said they in no way relate to the immense contribution of the teams that work on those shows and the significant journalistic value they've provided over the years. But some had commercial value too. Fair Go and Sunday, as we heard, still pull in big six-figure live primetime TV audiences and also more views now on TVNZ Plus, as TVNZ's marketers themselves frequently boast to the advertisers. And TVNZ's current chief executive Jodie O'Donnell knows about this in detail. Until this year, she was TVNZ's commercial director. So why propose killing these programmes now? Well, this week, our requests to talk to her and also to TVNZ's executive editor of news, Phil O'Sullivan, were unsuccessful. But Jodie O'Donnell did talk to News Talk ZB on Friday night.
So why Fair Go?
Again, it's only a proposal at this stage. So we've spent the last 7 months working across the business to try and find cost savings. And we're now at the stage that we need to do something more significant. And so we've had a look at all of our options. I've been quite open with the fact that there are no sacred cows.
Yeah.
And we need to find some ways to stop doing some things for us to reduce our costs.
And Sunday, because Sunday apparently is reasonably popular, massive audience, one of the top five TV programs in the country.
Yeah, look, we don't want to make any decisions around, you know, what is amazing journalism. And TVNZ is still investing over $40 million in news and current affairs. So we absolutely believe in the future of news and current affairs. But we have a situation right now that our operating model is more expensive than the revenue that we're making, and we have to make some really tough decisions.
And when Newstalk ZB's Heather Duplessis-Allen asked if Shortland Street will be cut back too, Jodie O'Donnell told her that those decisions are in accordance with the legislation that politicians have put in place.
We'll constantly be looking at things to keep the operating model in line with what our revenue is. I mean, we are a commercial business, so that's the remit that we need to work in. We operate within the TVNZ Act, and that is clear that we need to be a commercial broadcaster.
And that effectively makes TVNZ a state-owned company that serves advertisers as much as New Zealanders. And just 1 week earlier, TVNZ had revealed that its income, mostly advertising, fell by 13.5% in the last half of last year. Jodie O'Donnell had this take on that on Newstalk ZB.
Our competitors these days are not yourself or Sky or Warner Brothers, but they are Google and they are Meta. And these are multi-trillion dollar organisations. And as lots of the media have been saying over the last couple of weeks, it's clear that 90 cents in every dollar spent in digital news advertising is going offshore. That's 10 cents left for the likes of NZME, TVNZ, Stuff, any of the other local broadcasters. Yeah. And that's a challenge.
And the next morning on his Newstalk ZB show, TV presenter Jack Tame also pointed the finger at the titans of tech.
Ultimately, the force of those digital giants is irrepressible. Trying to save free-to-air commercial TV with really high-quality news, current affairs and local programming in a country with 5 million people is like trying to bail out the Titanic with an empty ice cream container. I'm not personally aware of any comparable broadcast markets overseas where they have managed to pull it off.
But the thing is, the New Zealand media market isn't really compatible with many around the world. Few have a state-owned but fully commercial broadcaster trying to do news on TV and online, disconnected from publicly funded ones doing news on the TV and radio and online. And if things had panned out differently a year ago, that wouldn't be the case now either. In March 2023, a new not-for-profit public media entity incorporating RNZ and TVNZ was supposed to start. Almost $20 million was spent on a program called Strong Public Media, which was put in place because New Zealand's media sector was weak, or ailing, was the word that the business case for the new public media entity used. And the reason for that? Well, the plan said increased competition from overseas players had slashed a share of revenue from advertising. Now, this would have been the biggest media reform since the early 1990s, but before the last election, the Labour government killed the plan, citing the cost of living crisis. And if that had gone ahead, well, would that mean that we wouldn't now be hearing about news shows and news people who have been national TV fixtures for years vanishing from the screens? Tracy Martin was the chair of the establishment board, which was charged with getting Aotearoa New Zealand public media up and running, until the former government asked them to stop in February last year.
I don't have any problem believing that they would have had to change what they were delivering. Would it have been cuts to news and current affairs that we would have been seeing? Would there have been other decisions made because the commerciality of the model was not what was the major driver?
So during the planning for the new media entity, what were the assumptions about the level of television advertising revenue and digital revenue that TVNZ would have been able to pull in, and indeed its costs, if they're now saying that the costs rising to be greater than their revenue are the problem they're reacting to? What were they telling you that they thought would be happening about now and maybe even a couple of years from now?
They were telling us that it wouldn't be as bad as what we believed it would be. Their modelling was not as dramatic as our modelling. We were happy to accept that for this reason. Our modelling gave us a particular window by which to change the ecosystem in which New Zealand media could survive, to try and stabilise it. And if their modelling was, you know, not as dramatic as ours, that gave us a bigger window. But surely nobody is surprised the current model of the ecosystem is not sustainable any longer.
Well, this confuses me a little bit. In the business case document, which I went back and had a look at, there's a track of TVNZ's revenue versus its expenses. Was TVNZ, or indeed you as a group, were you still forecasting that that was going to come back into balance? Because already by 2020, the costs look like they had, the expenses had exceeded the revenue. And as we now know, the revenue's fallen further and more quickly than anybody thought.
No, we were projecting that the linear revenue particularly was going to continue to drop substantially and relatively quickly. They were not going to be able to switch their advertising revenue at the same capacity from their linear to their digital. They had more confidence in that than we did, which is why there was the top up from the government from the carryover funds, you know, the funds that had been funneled through New Zealand On Air to try and help them get over that bump as we continued to work on long-term sustainable financial solutions for public media in New Zealand.
When it came to the Aotearoa New Zealand public media legislation, there was this kind of estimate that it would be a $400 million operation. Roughly half of it would come from commercial revenue and half from the public purse as a not-for-profit and public media-driven entity. But at the time, the TVNZ chief executive said this was unambitious. So, you know, what's unfolding now was something either they didn't foresee, they wanted to project the impression they could do better than they actually have. Is that a bit of a problem if that's led to the situation that we're now in?
TVNZ, their front-facing rhetoric was highly optimistic, because they needed to retain the confidence of the advertising market and other players. It was a very rosy picture that they painted. And remember, they had a mandate to be a commercial business that had to give confidence to the advertisers and the rest of New Zealand. But they were very confident only, 2 years ago? This won't happen.
If the National Party in opposition, before they became government, were calling the merger, a solution looking for a problem or something like that, the kind of message that actually things aren't broke and don't need fixing, that now they're in power, it turns out there really was a big problem, and in part because of, you know, things broadcasters were saying.
I won't comment for today's government, but all of the information, the business case, everything that we could release, we put into the public domain to try and show there is a problem. So this is not new. Statements being made in the last couple of days about people get their news from somewhere else, Truth and Trust has dropped off, linear has got to be transferred into the digital environment. How are we going to take those that are still on linear with us into that digital environment? None of those things are new comments. They're all inside what was the documentation that we placed into the public domain. I asked for special permission as the chair of ANZPM, the working group, to brief both the spokesperson for broadcasting in the Greens Act and National at the time, just to try and make sure that everybody has as much information as we could give them.
The current minister is saying we will prepare a cabinet paper, some policies. Are there things that can come out of the ANZPM process? Is what was done over that four-year period now going to come relevant, or does the whole process need to kind of begin again in a new environment?
Well, I would hope it doesn't have to begin again in a new environment, because we've already established the problem definition. I would hope, you know, current officials and so on and so forth know where to find all that information and go and have a look at it, but there's no silver bullet.
Do you think that's a pretty perverse outcome that we have a state-owned television company that pretty much can only put on the kind of news programs, apart from the network news, that advertisers can inject themselves into?
So they are a company. They have been told that they must be commercial, that they need to make these decisions based on commercial imperatives. Their ultimate goal, once the charter was removed, was to deliver a dividend to the New Zealand taxpayer. If the imperative was on, you are the core and the base of public media in New Zealand, and if Armageddon happens, and that was where we started from, if Armageddon happens and all other New Zealand media can no longer exist, you have to be there as the fourth estate to make sure that New Zealanders have a place to go to for truth and trust. They've made decisions based on the mandate and the criteria that they have to work under at the moment, which, again, we had that conversation with the advertisers, because the advertisers weren't listening either. They were quite hung up on who was in government at the time. They weren't actually hearing what we were saying. They just made a whole lot of assumptions because of who the decision makers were.
So are you comfortable that in the whole process of ANZPM that message was clear enough, if this isn't enacted, something else will have to come? The status quo was not sustainable. You're comfortable that was clear enough?
Well, we repeated it again and again and again. The media themselves have been telling the powers that be that we just can't sustain this. Nobody should question that anymore. It was never sustainable. This is an ecosystem. We hope not a collapse, but it's certainly a massive reset of an ecosystem.
By mid-year, if both these broadcasters have their way with their plans, there will be pretty much no current affairs programs other than the ones that are specific to Māori interests and funded by agencies like Te Māngai Pāhu and New Zealand On Air. Those programs have been provided for by specific funding. As a former politician and a person in public life, are you disturbed by that, or do you think that the media across the board, other media that aren't on television, will fill the void?
Can I just talk as a New Zealander as opposed to a previous politician or whatever? You cannot get away from that the private media companies must make a profit. They're in business. And so at the moment is TVNZ. The really interesting thing about conversations with TVNZ and their upper echelons of their organisation was that they really didn't see themselves as part of the public service. And yet everything they own, all the assets they have and so on and so forth, they all belong to the New Zealand taxpayer. I don't have any confidence that the private media sector will pick up investigative journalism or following a story, holding to account, if they can't make it pay.
But speaking as just a citizen, but albeit one who's a person in public life, when you hear journalists say, as they have in the past week in response to these cuts, you know, those slogans like, you know, democracy dies in darkness and sunlight is the best disinfectant and all this is at risk, do you think that's really genuine? Because some people respond to that and say, oh, you know, there is a large degree of, you know, the self-interest of the media here. It's their salaries, it's their chosen career, and that is one current politician has said, media sometimes lack self-awareness about their own, maybe have too much self-importance. Where do you think the balance lies there?
I think it's very real, right? I mean, the comments might seem flippant. It might be that we've heard them so often that they've started to lose their impact. The fact that the Fourth Estate is vitally important to a well-balanced democracy. One of the things that public media entities can be held to account for is whether they are showing bias, is whether they have got an evidence-based reporting going on. That was part of the other piece of work that was running in parallel with ANZPM through the Ministry of Culture and Heritage, was an amalgamated monitoring body that inside it had an integrity unit that would not wait for complaints, but would actually be proactively making sure that they kept a monitoring view over the public media entity to ensure that they could either prove there was or wasn't bias or wasn't evidence-based reporting.
If a new cabinet paper, a new policy might now be devised, you know, in part because of what I think is fair to call a crisis going on right now, would any advice you've got for the minister as he embarks upon this?
I don't give advice to the minister. Well, I would give advice to the officials, which is go back and pull out the business case, the application that was devised by ANZPM. Go back and actually have a look at the submissions and the number of people who supported the concept but had concerns about little particular areas. And don't let perfection get in the way of action.
That was Tracy Martin, Chair of the Establishment Board for Aotearoa New Zealand Public Media, a new public media entity proposed by the previous government, which would have replaced TVNZ and RNZ until they stopped the plan weeks before it was due to go ahead a year ago. Well, this past week, the Prime Minister of the current government and his media minister both acknowledged our media's role in our democracy and said that their sustainability is important. And on Thursday, Melissa Lee told reporters in Parliament she's working on some new policy to take the Cabinet to that end.
It's one after the other, isn't it? So I think, you know, it is an industry that is actually in a lot of pain at the moment.
We are trying to actually modernise the media sector, and there may be some things in there that could potentially help the broadcasting media, every aspect of the media.
And next weekend here on Media Watch, we'll talk to the Media Minister, Melissa Lee, about all that. Well, this week, we also spoke to several journalists at TVNZ and at News Hub, some of whom were willing to talk to us but felt they couldn't, and some who agreed to do so before reconsidering. And that was for the understandable reason that they are working on counter-proposals to the closures and cuts or supporting others who are, in the hope, however slim, that these proposals can be overturned or at least minimised. And we will hear from some of them about how all that goes in the future here on Media Watch. Well, as we heard earlier, Broadcasting Minister Melissa Lee copped criticism from some in the media last week for her initial responses to the possible demise of News Hub. But Melissa Lee did clarify those comments when she was interviewed this week, and on Checkpoint, she bridled at the suggestion that she wasn't concerned or taking the media's problems seriously.
You're laughing. What is funny about several hundred people losing their jobs?
Well, I'm not laughing about that. I'm just saying you were saying that I was relaxed. I was shocked.
Now, on Thursday, after TVNZ announced 68 jobs to go, the Prime Minister empathised like this.
Well, look, what I want to say on TVNZ is it's incredibly unsettling, and I do genuinely feel for the staff, and some of them will be here today.
But not so ACT leader David Seymour.
But part of it's having a product to sell, and I think that's going to actually require some self-reflection from journalists at the same time as we think about what, if anything, is the role of government in funding media.
You did hear that with the 757, they were worried about a whining noise at the back of the plane. The journalist got off and it was soft.
It was the ACT leader in a long chat with Sean Plunkett on the platform that same day. And on Newstalk ZB, David Seymour said changes in advertising and changing technology were really the media's main issues, but journalists should also take some of the blame themselves. And he singled out one in particular from TVNZ.
Benedict Collins grinning down the camera about Chris Luxon's apartment cost. And, you know, these are the people that cry, oh, you've got to give us sympathy and you're inhumane and you should be kinder to us. But they have spent years, you know, celebrating and dancing at every slip that a politician makes, competing to get scalps, as they call them. And all of a sudden they say, oh, but when we have a bad day, you've got to be kind to us. I think it shows their delightful lack of self-awareness and immaturity.
Now there, David Seymour was echoing sentiments in an ACT Party newsletter that he went on to recommend to ZB's Mike Hosking. And this said that the loss of trust in journalists is not someone else's fault. And then it asked,
does government have a role to play in media? At the moment, it owns a radio and a TV station and hands out money from various jam jars like Creative New Zealand and New Zealand On Air.
Now, in that chat on Wednesday on the platform, Sean Plunkett urged David Seymour to change the board at TVNZ.
I mean, I look at the board of Television New Zealand, we look at Joanna Kidman. You basically need to get the malcontents out of this government and public life, don't you?
David Seymour didn't respond directly to that suggestion of Sean Plunkett's, but he did say the board at Creative NZ funded hateful and humourless bad media. Well, this week, on his Twitter account, David Seymour criticised a TVNZ One news story for featuring a health advocate who had earlier criticised David Seymour. And before that, he also criticised an online article by TVNZ chief correspondent John Campbell for quoting and linking to a left-wing blog. As an Associate Minister of Finance, David Seymour is in fact also a shareholding minister of TVNZ, as is Melissa Lee. And it was for that reason that his initial comments about News Hub's demise last week made headlines when David Seymour said he thought TVNZ should be returning bigger dividends to the Crown. And David Seymour's comments also caused a headache for Melissa Lee in Parliament on Thursday.
Honourable David Seymour has his own views and he is responsible for his comments. As a shareholding minister, it will be irresponsible for me to interfere in TVNZ's editorial independence. I believe and honour TVNZ's editorial independence,
The media perform an important duty in our democracy, and this should be protected.
Well, the Television New Zealand Act safeguards TVNZ's editorial independence from the government, saying that no shareholding minister or any minister can give direction to TVNZ in respect of its programmes, its content, or the gathering or presentation of news and current affairs. So, predictably, the media covered all this extensively on Thursday, and David Seymour's claims that the media were too full of self-pity. But an unrepentant David Seymour was also part of that mix on TVNZ's Own One News.
Every time a media outlet goes nuts about a comment like this, they just prove my point that media is lacking the ability to ask the simple question, maybe it's the way that we're conducting ourselves that's led to our loss of audience share.
And David Seymour's not the only politician to have a go at the media about that, but how aware was he of his own position on all this sort of thing in the past? When former Cabinet Minister Kitty Allen made critical comments about RNZ last year at the farewell do for her then-partner Marnie Dunlop, who was also then an RNZ presenter, David Seymour had this to say at that time to RNZ.
There is a real problem when the people who hold the purse strings aren't absolutely critically cautious about even the perception of interfering with media. Nobody loses their democracy all at once. It's always a thousand little chips, and we don't want to see them.
And that was pretty prominent in Jenna Lynch's report on all this for News Hub at 6 on Thursday night, which had this blunt conclusion for David Seymour himself.
Did the Prime Minister talk to David Seymour?
No, I think it is my responsibility as Minister of Broadcasting to have a conversation with him, so I will.
She's spoken to you?
No, she hasn't, and it's not really her job, to be honest, but there you go.
It is his job, though, to keep his nose out of TVNZ's editorial decisions.
Now, in the past, few politicians have been willing to pick fights with the media like this for very long, especially if it risks irritating cabinet colleagues or the party leading governing coalitions, but times have changed, it seems. However, did David Seymour's opinions actually qualify as giving direction to TVNZ, as outlawed by the TVNZ Act? A question for University of Otago Public Law Professor Andrew Geddes.
It's hard to say absolutely definitively, because the only people who can tell us what direction means in that legislation would be the courts, and we haven't had a court case on it. I would think, however, that direction would require something much more direct and formal than some tweets and sort of offhand comments in an interview. So in terms of the black letter law, I wouldn't say that this constitutes a direction. The question really, though, I suppose, is, as a minister, is he constrained only by what the black letter law says? Or does the underlying reason for editorial independence from the government, which is to say TVNZ, in order to do its job, needs to be seen as independent, not just be independent in fact, but be seen to be independent from the government so that the public can trust that the news it's putting out hasn't been influenced.
So does it seem to you it might be the sort of thing that would cause people to worry about influence in the way you just described?
Well, it's the pattern. So, you know, you could take each of his individual statements and say, oh, well, you know, that in itself doesn't really matter. But where you've got, you know, sort of repeated tweets saying, look, these are the sources I think TVNZ should be talking to, saying that the journalists are not doing their job properly and that they're not covering stories the way that they want to be, and so on and so on. That pattern starts to call into question, what's he trying to achieve? Now, if he's just blowing off steam and trying to stir up his base by, you know, I'll have a go at the media, no one likes the media, and so on, fine, but that has consequences. And the consequences are it does go to undermine the public trust and the public standing of the media, which is, you know, in a constitutionally very important part of our system. It's not just, you know, that the media is a nice to have. It's if you don't have these institutions that are performing these roles, our entire system suffers. And as a minister who's a part of that system, he owes that responsibility to make sure that doesn't happen.
I mean, some politicians, of course, do push back on the media in public, and just because they become cabinet ministers, they should still have the right to be able to do that and media criticism if they want to?
And certainly, if there's factual inaccuracies, then yes, obviously, it's quite right for a minister to say, well, hang on, the media said this and actually that. I mean, that sort of contestation of facts and ideas is a part of the system. I guess it goes more to the question of whether the commentary is trying to improve media reporting or whether the commentary is basically trying to undermine the media or undermine how the public views it. You know, I think David Seymour, you know, with respect to him, his commentary over, you know, an extent of these various comments is having that effect.
So as you say there, things change when politicians become cabinet ministers. There's collective responsibility and all of that, and the cabinet manual. So I looked up the section on associate ministers' responsibilities in the cabinet manual. Associate ministers should take particular care to avoid making public statements or taking initiatives of any sort without the knowledge and approval of their portfolio minister, which in the case of David Seymour as associate finance minister, his portfolio minister is Nicola Willis. Does that mean David Seymour should actually require Nicola Willis's permission to say what he did, or maybe Melissa Lees as broadcasting minister?
That goes more to where an associate minister says something within the general portfolio that may be taken to be an announcement of government policy or an announcement of formal view on a matter. And then the question could be, are they saying this as the minister holding the, you know, collective government to that, or are they saying it in some other role? So I don't think it covers things like, you know, tweets or statements about the media.
Well, yes, the Minister of Media, Melissa Lee, has said this week, look, we're drafting proposals on a media policy and who is to try and modernise the media sector, and she's clearly working on it under some pressure. Seems unhelpful for a shareholding minister in TVNZ, Mr Seymour, to be kind of burning goodwill with the state-owned broadcaster and the rest of the media right now?
The industry is clearly in a great deal of trouble, and it's a really important industry. And while there may be some political capital to be gained by trying to say, you know, the mainstream media is getting what it deserves, we can't function as a society without it. And it would be good to see some recognition of that in the way politicians, ministers especially, talk about it.
Yeah, so Minister Melissa Lee did say, I will have words with Mr Seymour about this, and he was quite bullish in saying, well, she can if she wants, but it's not her job. Kind of is, though, isn't it? Isn't it the way cabinet works with the collective responsibility and the cabinet manual and all of that?
Certainly she can have a word and she can, you know, offer some, you know, suggestions. However, ultimately it's only the Prime Minister who can call David Seymour to account here. Ministers can't control each other. Ultimately it's the Prime Minister who's in charge of making sure that the cabinet team, the government team, is operating properly. So in the end, this will come down to Chris Luxon to have to decide at what point he needs to step in to cool things down.
That was the University of Otago public law professor Andrew Geddes. So clearly there's plenty more to come on all this, and next weekend we will follow up on it with the Minister of Media and Communications, Melissa Lee. We'll be back again before then, though, with Midweek Media Watch after 9:30 next Wednesday on Nights with Emile Donovan, and then back again with more Media Watch at the same time next weekend here on RNZ National.